The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live.
Welcome into the Brad Sesmat Show. Jordan Hamm here filling in for the big guy, and have a jam-packed show for you. Michael Fabiano talking all things fantasy football, the senior fantasy analyst for Sports Illustrated. Always appreciate him jumping on, chopping it up. A busy week one, a lot of overreactions, underreactions, injuries to get to. So a lot going on with him. And there was news that broke right before we went to air here. So let's just jump into that right now. Our rundown brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you and taking care of your business. And just a half hour before we went to air, the NBA put out their statement about the independent investigation regarding Robert Sarver and the Phoenix Suns. The results of that coming out is that he will be suspended for a full year, as well as being fined $10 million. And he must, during his suspension, complete a training program focused on respect and appropriate conduct in the workplace. So I know that there's a lot of people that have a disdain for Robert Sarver because of the on-court products up until a couple of years ago, what that looked like, and that it was a bottom feeder. Over the last decade, it was just a bad franchise. They've turned that around since then. I know people were hoping that this could be a way to get Robert Sarver out as the owner. Let's just keep in mind, the focus should be on those that were on the receiving end of these things that he did that warranted a suspension for a full year and a $10 million fine, which is the maximum that the NBA can enforce, essentially. So if you're saying like, oh, that's just a drop in the bucket with him, why is that not more? That's literally the maximum that they can give. But again, let's try to separate the on court versus what was going on behind the scenes with this investigation that took started in November of 2021. Remember, there are real life people involved in this, and the focus should be on them and kind of how that, if that is or is not a proper amount of justice. The key findings of this investigation: Mr. Sarver, on at least five occasions during his tenure with the Suns Mercury organization, repeated the N-word when recounting the statement of others. Mr. Sarver engaged in instances of inequitable conduct toward female employees, made many sex-related comments in the workplace, made inappropriate comments about the physical appearance of female employees and other women, and on several occasions engaged in inappropriate physical conduct toward male employees. And then the final key finding: Mr. Sarver engaged in demeaning and harsh treatment of employees, including by yelling and cursing at them. So those were the key findings by this investigation. So now the obvious next questions is what happens? What happens in this year that he's gone? Is this enough? Based on these findings, is this something that it should be looked into more? Other parts of this report also talked about how basically it was kind of like almost like a lack of institutional control going on behind the scenes, and that HR was not working properly to hear these complaints, to create a place where these complaints can be heard and acted upon and resolved. The investigation also concluded that the Suns' human resources function was historically ineffective and not a trusted resource for employees who were subjected to acts of improper workplace conduct. Okay. Sorry, I was stumbling over those. The print quite tiny on this tweet that I'm trying to read. So next questions: So what does this mean? Is this enough to change what happened behind the scenes? We talk so much about the changing of the culture on the court. Sounds like there needs to be a changing of the culture behind the scenes as well. And then moving forward, who steps in as that, where Sarver was in his roles with the team, who steps in for that? How does that affect the franchise, the team? But again, I think the focus here with these findings should be those that were on the receiving end of it. And some of these things that you read, certain people might say, oh, that's just, you can't talk to, back in the day, employers talked to employees that way. That's not the world we live in anymore. Okay. It's just not. And I think the league understands that. And that's why this investigation has been so thorough. Again, I think that this is the first piece of this puzzle. Now it's going to be, I'm sure more is going to come out. I'm sure there's going to be plenty of discussion about the next couple steps of this and how this will affect the Suns, affect Sarver, affect his potential ownership. I mentioned plenty of people wanting to get Robert Sarver out as owner. And this was a means to do that strictly because of the on-court stuff. Is this enough to have him move on from ownership, or how close was it to that? A lot of questions are going to be coming up over the coming days. A lot of news is going to be coming up over the coming days as well. So, again, big news coming down from that. It's going to be, this is just the beginning. So, again, thoughts go out to those that were on the receiving end and the victims of this. It's just going to be I think quite a process now of to really feel the full, ripple of everything that comes from this. I think it's going to take a little bit of time for that. Coming up next, sometimes there's no way to really not have an awkward segue. We're just going to lean into the awkward segue. We're going to be talking fantasy football up next. Michael Fabiano, always appreciate him jumping on. So keep it here to the Brad Sessat Show. I'm Jordan Hamm. A chaotic NFL week one means a chaotic fantasy week as well. And we have senior fantasy analyst for Sports Illustrated, Michael Fabiano, as always, jumping on with us, talking all things fantasy football. Michael, thanks so much for joining us.
Always my pleasure. It was a crazy Sunday. And in a lot of cases, it was a disappointing Sunday for fantasy managers. And those of us who root for the Dallas Cowboys, but we don't have to get into that.
I wasn't going to bring it up, but I was thinking about you during the game.
Listen, I already know. And Jerry Jones comes out and says he's not putting Dak on the IR. I think that reeks of desperation. It is what it is, Cowboys fans.
So let's get into this. Obviously, after week one, it can be overreaction Monday, overreaction Tuesday, all throughout the week. We have such small points of data to go off of, and that certainly applies for fantasy. So I just wanted to run through a couple of guys of, should this be an overreaction, an underreaction? Let it ride out. Just get some your perspective on some of the performances from week one, but especially Thursday night. I know a lot of fantasy managers upset with the way Cam Akers and Allen Robinson were used. What do you just foresee of everybody getting worked in together, a new offense, a lot of new pieces there?
Well, if you listened to Fantasy Dirt on SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio last week, you would have heard that I had suggested that Daryl Henderson was going to start. I don't have any shares of Cam Akers, didn't want him. My intel was not good on him. And they just trust Daryl Henderson more. I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but bottom line here is that Daryl Henderson's the Rams running back to start. And until Cam Akers sees more work, because he barely touched the ball last week, you can't play him. And I know you probably drafted him as a two. You can't play Cam Akers right now. Not until the Rams show a commitment to getting him the football. And after last week with Darrell Henderson, who had a fine game in a blowout, I don't know that Akers is going to see a whole lot of touches this week against Atlanta.
With Trey Lance, you know, obviously a lot of questions going in of, you know, how he's going to look, weather a huge factor with week one. So where are you at with Trey Lance, his week one performance, and how it may look a couple weeks here down the road?
Trying to look at the positives here because I love Trey Lance, and I think he's going to end up being a QB1 at some point this year. It was awful weather and very difficult to throw with a wet football. He did rush for over 50 yards, which was great. And now that the Niners are going to be without Elijah Mitchell, maybe they're going to even have Trey Lance involved a little bit more in terms of running the football. We saw Debo running the football again, like he did last year. I would put that performance aside. He's got Seattle this week, and I think he'll perform much better, hopefully where the weather is not so much of an issue, because it was a mess in Chicago. It was pouring during the game. The field was an absolute mess. And so I'm going to give him a pass there, and I would fire him up in week two if you don't have another really good option on your bench.
Mm-hmm. And then we were curious to see with the Broncos what the running back split would look like. It was pretty right down the middle with Melvin Gordon and Javonte Williams. Javonte Williams getting drafted very high, going into this season. Just how do you see how that could become an issue for Javonte owners, or how all this shakes out?
Maybe it won't. He had 11 catches last night. Mm-hmm. 11. That's a ton for a running back. Hell, that's a ton for McCaffrey and Alvin Kamara, no less Javonte Williams. Yeah, Melvin led the team in carries, and Javonte had more touches, but it wasn't like that widening gap that a lot of people thought that we would see. But if that's the role that Javonte is going to play, then I think he's going to be fine. He'll be an RB1, maybe not a high RB1, but he'll be a low RB1. Melvin Gordon's still a really good player at 29 years old. Coming off a year where he averaged, 4.6 yards per rush. And I know Melvin. He wasn't just going to roll over and give Javonte the role. They're actually friends. They hope to both rush for 1,000 yards this year. I don't know if that's going to happen. But I think even though the touch share was closer than maybe a lot of people projected, the roles that both guys played, especially with Javonte being the main pass catcher out of the backfield, I think he's going to be fine. You fire him up every week as a high RB2.
Similar situation in Houston, Damian Pierce getting so much buzz heading into the season. And then Rex Burkhead here in week one, getting a lot of the passing scenarios that where he's in. Just how do you see that backfield shaking out here early on in 2022?
I didn't see that coming, honestly. I thought that Damian Pierce would lead the backfield in touches and Burkhead would play his traditional third down role, be utilized in passing downs. It didn't happen that way. Pierce started, but Burkhead led the team in touches. Now, is that going to continue? I don't know. We're going to have to find out. They've got Denver this week. Denver did a pretty good job of bottling up Rashad Penny on Monday night. So maybe neither guy is startable this week. But it's also, Lovie Smith is a veteran head coach who clearly is going to lean on the veterans, and maybe he's going to bring Pierce along slowly. I think they showed faith in him when they released Marlon Mack. I guess we're going to have to wait on Damian Pierce making that impact, because we all thought it would be maybe not immediate, but pretty quick, and it wasn't.
Cordarrelle Patterson, he was the surprise of last year, off to a hot start. We didn't really know what that backfield was going to look like, what that offense was going to look like. Where are you on Cordarrelle Patterson this year?
I didn't like him coming into the year, but everything panned out great for him in week one. If you watched the tape, it was Damian Williams who actually played 7 of the first 10 snaps out of the backfield. Okay. And then he got hurt and Tyler Allgeier was inactive. So it was all Patterson. Patterson looked good. He ran hard. I mean, didn't look like a guy who's played wide receiver for most of his career, right? Looked really good. But if Damian Williams is able to come back this week against the Rams and the matchup is way more formidable, I thought the Saints would be better against the run. They weren't. They were really good against the run last year. Obviously it's only week one. We still got to collect some more data, maybe another 3 weeks worth before we really know who's good against the run and who's not, et cetera. I guess Patterson's a flex this week, but I would temper expectations. If Damian Williams is active, he's going to see touches. And this Rams defense got embarrassed on national television on their home field, I think they're probably going to have a little bit of a sour taste in their mouth. So that might not be good for the Falcons offense.
Week one, some big injuries. Dak Prescott, Najee Harris. We don't know kind of what the status of how he will be moving forward. If you have one of those big time players and they went down to injury, and you're looking for the waiver wire to try to add a little bit of depth, who's jumping out to you?
Carson Wentz looked good in fantasy and had 27 plus points. He's got the Lions this week, so Carson Wentz probably the number one add off the waiver wire. Matt Ryan could be floating around on the waiver wire as well. I'm certainly not telling people to pick up Cooper Rush. And Marcus Mariota could be floating around out there, but he's got the Rams this week. And Mariota did all of his damage on the ground, which, again, mobile quarterbacks, like, they're very valuable. So if you're in a deeper league, Mariota's out there, you could potentially go there. But for the most part, you're going to be playing the matchups. Hopefully you draft the two quarterbacks. If I had Dak Prescott, I was drafting another. Typically, unless I have Mahomes or Herbert or Lamar or Kyler or somebody like that, I'm going to draft a second quarterback. So hopefully folks out there have that backup that they'll be able to utilize this week with Dak on the sidelines. And I'm hoping, you know, I am not a big fan of Jerry Jones. I don't think he's won anything. In fact, that's the truth. He's won nothing without Jimmy Johnson's fingerprint on the team. I'm hoping that his optimism is not, I guess, desperate. And if Dak can come back against the Rams in week five, I'd feel pretty good. Because right now, Zeke takes a hit, Pollard takes a hit, Lamb takes a massive hit. Maybe Schultz not so much because Cooper Rush is going to throw to him. But this is it's a bad scenario there going down in Dallas right now.
Michael Fabiano, there's a reason we call you the best in the business. Thanks so much for the time and the insight. Looking forward to seeing what comes up in week two.
All right, Jordan, have a good week.
Special thanks to Michael Fabiano for jumping on with us talking all things fantasy sports. Have a feeling this year on the field and in the fantasy and gambling realms are going to be really, really fun. Let the chaos ensue. Before I let you guys go, saw something here with Mike Trout. And he homered in his seventh straight game, one away from tying the MLB record. He did it in a win. And he did it for a team, a Los Angeles team that is 61-80 and 30 games out of the AL West lead. They don't even register on the wild card panel. Excuse me. Yes, they do. They are 18 games back of a wild card spot. You have Mike Trout. You have Shohei Ohtani. Shohei Ohtani, who is doing things that hasn't been done on a baseball field in a century. Mike Trout, who has consistently been, if we go back the past 15 years, at least decade, probably most productive player, at least position player in history, in the league. And we never see him in October. We never see him in October. I don't think that they might be getting closer to moving on from him, getting a boatload of prospects and just kind of really doing the full rebuild. But how many times have we seen when they signed Albert Pujols, when they signed some of these pitchers, when they always sign, it seems like they win the offseason a lot, but they sure don't win in the postseason or even get to the postseason. Mike Trout, to me, is he the biggest wasted talent in sports? Like, in terms of individual accomplishment versus team success. Like, Mike Trout, I don't know if you can do that much more and have a team that, like, just refuses to make the postseason. And, you know, it feels like I'm in a longtime fantasy baseball league with some friends from high school. It's like our 14th year doing it or something like that. And it's whoever gets signs, whichever pitcher signs with the Angels, whoever gets traded to the Angels and is a pitcher, it's usually like, all right, well, expect Tommy John at some point. Like, that they just, I don't know if it's bad luck. I don't know if they, you know, who they offended among the baseball gods that this happened, but it's, you're going to look back at Mike Trout's Hall of Fame speech and be like, those Angels teams were like, I don't know, 100 games under 500 for his entire career. It's absolutely wild to me. And I'm trying to think of another player who has accomplished so much and their teams haven't. Like, you think of like A-Rod with the Rangers, but like that was short term. This is like Trout's entire career, and he's been in the league for a minute. You know, I'm trying to think of like any NBA players, or, you know, Joe Thomas is one that fits the bill, offensive tackle for the Browns. Elite at his position, like at a position that everybody needs a great left tackle, and they didn't do anything in his career. But like baseball, you can have more of an impact as an individual player because the rosters are smaller, and you know, you can truly go be that game changer. But Mike Trout, like, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens the next couple of years in his career. Yes, he's been injured a little bit more. But what is he going to want to go just team up with somebody and go get a ring? Is he going to just stand pat? The Angels seemingly try to make moves every offseason, and it's the same result every single time. And it just doesn't quite make sense to me. So that's the thing I'm going to ponder the rest of the day. I hope you guys have a great Tuesday. Make sure to check out all of the content on our website, sports360az.com. On the prep side, like, everybody is absolutely killing it. Claudia Collins on the recruiting front, Jordan Spurgeon, Devin Henry, Eliav Gabay, doing an awesome job. Bleacher Talk is now back, the great high school show that they've been doing. I've been, you know, trying to beef up our college content quite a bit, and hope you're enjoying that. Again, Eric and I were just on the road in Stillwater, and that was super fun. And now it's I'm thinking I might be in Tucson this weekend. I want to check out U of A against North Dakota State, especially before U of A goes on the road to Cal. And kind of see where they're at and see what the vibe is. You know, there was a little bit of buzz with Mississippi State, didn't go their way. Let's see if the Tucson faithful show up to that game. And then, of course, we always have our pro coverage as well. A lot going on with the Cardinals. So make sure to always be checking us out. We're trying to post a lot of unique stuff you won't get anywhere else. And we take a lot of pride in that. So always appreciate your support. Have a great Tuesday. This has been the Brad Sesmet Show, and I'm Jordan Hamm.